guys. This is Dan from the Indie Film Review. Guys, he's got a gun. Help me. Help. You gotta help. 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 You're supposed to give me a shot.
Bang.
Damn. Plowed through that joke like...
Bang.
Like a sloth.
Bang. Man. Bang. Never mind. I shot you. Guys. What? I didn't know. You said, I have a really great bit and everyone's going to love it. And I gave you the floor. Okay. I didn't realize I had to jump in and save it.
It's called improv. Thank you. And obviously you have not been going to your classes.
That's right. My mandatory classes.
I haven't seen you there on Thursday nights. man, I feel like a fool.
I feel like a woman. Hey everybody. This is the Indie Film Review. We're going to talk about independent films. That's what we do here. That's Dan. I'm Jared. Dan, what did we watch today?
We watched a film called How to Leave Your Podcast Co-Host High and Dry in a Bit.
Ooh, that's right. And this concludes the film. Now, what did we actually do, Dan?
We watched a film called No Promised Land. It is a short film. Well, no, it's not a short film. It's a short feature. It's a short feature.
Yeah, it's about 60 minutes. It's
about 60 minutes.
Yeah.
It is a film about a woman, a Native American woman, who has a child with a guy out of wedlock. Like, he has an affair with her, and he basically disowns the affair, and she ends up having a son in all of this. And she takes matters into her own hands, trying to get him to care about the son.
Mm-hmm. And there is a bit of a road trip in this.
A little bit.
This was sent to us by Colin Bressler.
Yes.
Who also sent us recently a film called The Mummy Murders.
Yes.
Murders.
Murders.
Because when it's murderers, there's two ers. There's er.
Yes.
I know how words work. Listen. We're going to get to that film eventually. I think he maybe submitted to us that like a week or so ago.
Yeah, so we're but just
we finally got to this movie. Yeah.
No Promised Land.
And I was telling Dan off mic, we have like 50 plus films. I just caught up on emails. We got a lot of fucking movies to get through, so we're working on it, all right? Dan, question for you.
Yes.
How did you feel about the types of cuts that this movie does? And I'll be more specific. There is like old-timey electronic, like almost like static kind of cuts, mm-hmm. where it's like they're trying to go from like old film to new mm-hmm. film, almost like a flashback type of thing. There's that, and then there's a lot of like superimposed fading of like one scene into another, fading. How did you feel about these kind of tricks the movie does?
So I think the visuals are this film's strongest suit. The mm-hmm. editing is really, really well done. I enjoyed it. So to answer that question outright, I enjoyed all the little editing tricks that happened. I enjoyed the mise-en-scene. I enjoyed the composition of all the shots. Like, there's one shot in particular that involves mirrors. Like, oh my god.
Yeah, that was...
Oh my god.
I don't even understand how they did that.
I went and then I just stared at it. I paused and I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah. My issue is I wish that type of high strangeness could have been kept throughout the entire film, because it feels like we have this... it's kind of dreamy. I guess there is kind of a fantastical thing going on in this movie. But when it hits that spot and you see her, she does like this dance mm-hmm. and then the like camera after image effects are like messing around with the dance and it's just like repeating over and over again. That's really, really cool. I just didn't, what was it trying to make us feel during those moments other than like, hey, I found this cool thing. I want to like put it in the film. Like, I don't know how it serves the film.
Well, the mirror shot is like the enigma of herself, right? Okay, so let me ask you this, Jared. How did you feel about the narrative? How did you feel about the narrative construction? How do you feel like about the way that this narrative is put together?
I think the premise is good. I think the narrative suffers at times because of the audio quality for me. It was kind of hard to see. Yeah, it was hard to hear some of the dialogue.
I had no problem with that at all.
Really? I don't know. I felt like the music was overpowering the dialogue.
Music does overpower
time.
The dialogue at times, but that was of no consequence to me. What I had a problem with was, so I think the narrative is excellent. I think everything is there for it to be a great narrative. I just didn't like how it was told out of order. You know what I mean?
I'm fine with stories being told out of order, but then it's like, okay, we're in the present. We go to the past to tell you something. And then it's like, we go to another past. It's like a flashback within
That's
a flashback that
like,
is out of order.
I think
that was a little weird.
Everything, all of the elements are there for this film to be super successful. I just don't think that the way in which it is pieced together is as strong as it could be.
The story is not what I have an issue with. It's
exactly.
This movie is told in a bunch of vignettes, in montages, and like you're feeling how this scene feels, but you're not seeing the character just act it out. Like there are certain things where I'm like, I just want to see the main character and this guy have their relationship for a little bit. Like when there's not a lot of like dialogue between two people in this movie.
I don't think that that was the outcome of what this film needed to be. I think the film's message is very clear. It is definitely like from the film's title, it is a metaphor for American colonialization of the Native Americans who were here in the first place. Like it's all about that and how we took their land from them and they were promised land and they didn't receive it. And it doesn't hit you over the head with that, but like all of this woman's actions and all of this woman's story is very much a metaphor for this continued anxiety that we experience to this present day. So,
and it's like her wanting love from a literal cowboy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then him rejecting her after they make something together.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, it's like, holy shit.
Like,
yeah,
this film, it's firing really on all cylinders with its message, and I loved it. Like, it doesn't hit you over the head either. Like, you know, because it doesn't spell it out for you, but it's like the metaphors are so palpable that they seem obvious.
Yeah, I just think the execution is not as strong as it could have been.
Exactly. That's exactly where I am. You know what makes up for it?
What?
Fucking editing tricks. The fucking mirror
shots. Kertricks?
Kertricks. Silly rabbit.
Kertricks are for kids! I was thinking that. I'm like, how do I reference the rabbit in this right now? And Dan beat me to it.
Kertricks.
Yeah, I do like a lot of it. But I feel like I needed something to break up that, the edits and the montages, to give me a little breather in between those.
Nah.
And sometimes they do that with like some very interesting dialogue. I wanted to get into spoilers.
Let's do it.
Should we do it? Yeah. Okay, we're getting into spoilers. Is this movie out?
It's on Tubi.
Let's find out. Oh, it is on Tubi. So No Promised Land is on Tubi. Go check it out. So there's some scenes I really liked where it shows like the mom is rifling through her cabinet. Where do you keep food? Pantry. She's rifling through her pantry because her son's like, I'm hungry. And she's like, well, I don't think we have any food. Like, maybe we could eat some cat food. And she was kind of joking about eating cat food, but she's joking about it. But they're being 100% real about like, we do not have food. And it's like that, those little types of moments really make the film for me. And then there was another moment where the main character is talking to the driver, like the Uber driver. And we'll get into what's going on there in a second. But the driver's like, I'm in love right now. And she's like, well, how do you know that you're in love? I guess the main character is just the mom. I don't know if she has a name. So the mom's like, how do you know you're in love? And she's like, I don't know, it's just like a feeling. And they're kind of trying to commiserate over this or find some common ground. But what the driver doesn't know is that the mom is like going through this like terrible thing right now. And then I guess she could relate that to loving her son. But Dan, so, what is going on in this car? Because the context is key.
As soon as you said that, I just wanted to talk about it. Because I think that that's where a lot of this film suffers for me. In that, like, for the entire first half of the film, you literally think this is a weird Uber ride. And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What is going on? Like, the context of all of this happening. Mm-hmm. Like, she's bleeding out in an Uber car.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? And then you finally find out.
And you... Usually stuff like this for me would be intriguing, but I was kind of frustrated with like not understanding what was going on. But go ahead.
Aside, why do you think that is? Because I think that is like the core that we want to get at with our friend Bressler here, Colin Bressler, because that's exactly what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but something about being kept in the dark that she is holding this woman at gunpoint,
yeah,
that frustrated me.
I think it is how manic the mom is, and the mom is a little too unlikable for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to relate to her more and her to maybe have, you know, that Stockholm syndrome, like maybe a slight connection more with the driver, because then we could have had her in the film more instead of her just running away later on, right? And it would have given her a reason to be like, you know what, this is a bad situation. I'm learning that, like, she's not really that bad of a person, maybe I will try to help her, or, you know,
oh,
she
kind of
gets like reeled into this fucking nightmare that she's on.
I just had a thought, like, using the resources that we have afforded to ourselves, like Lyft, a woman of Native American descent is attempting to, you know, escape the hardship that she found herself in because she fraternized with
freedom.
No,
I know what you mean. I'm just kidding.
What I'm trying to say is maybe the Uber choice was on purpose, right? Maybe it's part of this extended metaphor that we're dealing with. But at the end of the day, she has a gun drawn on this woman.
But do we even really know it's an Uber? I think we're assuming. We never see that symbol.
No, it's totally not an Uber. I'm just calling it an Uber because that's what I thought it was.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
She literally,
like, she
gets in
just
this woman's
this lady's car.
That's exactly what happens. She's like, she pulls out her gun and says, drive. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. But like I said, the entire first half of this film, because you don't know, you think it's just a weird Uber ride until they go to a drive-thru and the woman calls for help, which is what I was trying to make fun of at the beginning.
Yeah.
And she pulls a gun on her and you're like, oh, okay, this all makes sense now. But then you brought up the idea that she's unlikable, but I like the fact that she's not likable because of everything that you see. Like, so the whole aspect, the reason why she has a gun is she goes to this guy, his place of business, and his wife is there. And she's trying to get him to pay for this kid because she can't afford the kid. She literally cannot afford it because there is no promised land. And the guy is not there at the time. So she's like, oh, you must be the wife. And the woman's like, what are you talking about?
What the hell is going
on? And she's like, she pulls out the gun and it's like, you need to give me all your money. And you're like, okay, this is crazy. And she ends up killing this woman because the woman tries to defend herself. The wife tries to defend herself and stabs her. So she kills her on accident. It's not like, well, she went in there brandishing a weapon, so we can't necessarily call it an accident.
But
the intent was not to kill her. It was just to take the money and run.
It is a degree of murder. And she does take the money.
That whole scene, I love this woman's acting. Because, like, she acts, like we've been talking about, there's not that much dialogue. She acts so much with her face. And in this moment where she's, like, just confused and scared and just absolutely distraught, it's so well conveyed just in her face while she's pointing this gun at this lady.
So Destiny Soria plays the mom.
It was absolutely wonderful. And
so I think it was good at times, and I did really like that scene. I just feel like more direction should have been given to, like, let's not repeat scenes, like, let's not repeat some of this dialogue. Let's keep it to where, like, you know, this scene is here to convey this emotion or this point, you know, or we learn this.
There were some repetitive cuts towards the end where it's like the movie shows you what happened earlier in the film. And some of them were necessary. Others were not. At least in my taste. I think this film has a boatload of potential. And I just, I think that my big hang up is this, the way the narrative's constructive, because the narrative itself is gorgeous and the metaphor is there and it's strong. Mm-hmm. And the awesome cinematography, it's all, I guess what's beneficial to it is, like, I know exactly what it is that would make me like this film more, is if it wasn't so puzzle-like.
And I think part of that is what I was saying before with, like, just flush out some of these characters a little more. Like, let me have her working at the diner and this Texas man comes in, you know, and he's, oh, I'm gonna get a coffee, and have them flirt. Have them be like, oh, do you come here often? Blah, blah, blah. Let's have a scene with them. And then maybe we'll have, because, like, they show them dating, but it's all in montage. And I think sometimes that's okay, but other times I really just want to hear, I want to be convinced that they really like each other. So when they rip that apart and he's like, no, I'm using you for sex, and I don't want this kid, that would hit way more to me. I'm sorry to cut you off, but
no. I'm sorry that I was trying to interrupt you, but, like, the to your point, you could easily add 20 minutes to this film with that, and it would still be just as strong, if not stronger.
And then you could have those fun interstitials and the montages in between those things. But yeah, I praise the weirdness. I like, there's some cool, okay, I want to go through my notes.
One of my favorites is because it happens multiple times in the film, but anytime what I take to be her as a child, her father carrying her through the water, and then
That was cool.
The mom and the father walking along the shoreline with the baby in their, or the daughter in the hands. And like, I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be her as a child. And then the return at the very end, where it's like, I'm going to return to water. Oh my God. It was good.
She's thinking about basically ending her life.
That's why I'm saying that I have such a hard time. I have such a hard time with this film because it exudes awesomeness, but then I get hung up in the puzzle nature of it.
Yeah. I want to talk about a couple shots I really liked. So when they were showing in a montage, the cowboy hat guy and the mom meeting for the first time, there's this great, like, it's played in slow-mo, but it's the camera guy is just walking slowly to where they are. So they're starting at a wide shot. Instead of zooming in, they're just walking the camera towards them. And they just slowly walk up. And it's kind of like they keep it on a pace, which is like zoo. And it goes right to their face. And then they do it with the other character. I'm like, oh, I really like that. Or there's a few times where they have the camera rotate around the subject.
Yeah.
In, like, during a pivotal moment of, like, them learning something. I thought that was really nice. So it's like a lot of really fun camera work.
One of those moments, if I'm not mistaken, is whenever she pulls the gun on the wife.
I think it
wraps around her.
Yeah. There's some really fun, interesting camera work in this that in other films we are complaining about a lot because of how standard. It's like a two-person shot and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This movie's going out of its way to do really fun
and it's really
shots.
Good at it.
I applaud them for doing stuff like that. Yeah, it's great. The mouse place. Mm. What did you think the mouse place was, Dan?
The mouse
place. Do you remember this? Because the little kid talks about it, and sometimes you can't understand what the little kid is saying. I had to put on subtitles for him.
I don't remember. I know what the mouse, I know, I remember it, but I don't remember what the mouse place is.
Well, what do you, when you hear the mouse place, what's the first thing? Okay, so Chuck E. Cheese. I thought Disneyland. But I don't know if either of us are right, because they show a little castle toy and a mouse is on it. And it's like a literal mouse place. And I love this imagery so much. I'm like, whatever this is, I love it. And then they showed, like, them playing together in this weird house. Mm. It was almost like a...
like
it
an imagination? Seemed like, I'm in this castle.
Yeah, it was. It looked like an indoor mini putt-putt golf course without the mini putt-putt. It's just like the weird walls of, like, fantasy. And I'm like, I don't know what this place is, but this seems really interesting to me. And the idea of, like, the mouse place being, like, the promised land or the happy place that we're supposed to get to. And she keeps telling her son, like, oh, don't worry, we're going to go there soon. It's going to be great. I just really like that concept. Yeah. I'm just wondering, how could they push that a little more?
Well, I mean, I think this film is, by and large, an art film. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not necessarily concerned. And this is probably another way I would come to this film's defense from my own critique, is like, it's not concerned with telling you a good narrative, because all of the things that make it a strong narrative are there. It's more concerned with showing you surrealism. It's more concerned with, like, mm-hmm. you know, the visual aspect as... So I think that's what the issue is. It's like, and it may just be a me issue. You have the strong metaphor of the narrative competing with the strong visuals of the film. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I don't know which one is winning. And mm-hmm. maybe that's a good problem to have. I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess the conceit could be that even though the film isn't doing what we expected or wanted it to be, like having this, like, I want a standard narrative where I learn more about the character and, you know, like they have like these interactions between each other. If the film's not interested in that, that's fine. And you can make something really cool with that. But then the main thing I would say to focus on is making sure that audio is good, perfect, good. And I want to be able to hear every single line of dialogue, right? And I don't want... Another thing is the music in this. There is music throughout, and the music is so different from one... Like, the music changes a lot in this movie, and it's really going. I think I need a more cohesive soundtrack where these songs all make sense with each other. Because that was kind of taking me out too. And also, like, the volume of that music. Sometimes you don't even need music, right? Mm. You could just have two people talking, cut out that white noise, and just have them in a car, two people talking, the kid's upset, you're trying to control the situation. And then have that music kick in at pivotal moments when you really want someone to feel a certain way.
I mean, I'll agree with you that I felt like sometimes the music felt a little all over the place, but that was far below any other thing that I had with the film, which was just like, I got confused. But outside of the confusion, just again, the visuals in this film are incredible. And then it has such a sad scene. Like, this is the scene I want to talk about. Like, it may be my favorite scene in the movie.
Okay.
Well, my favorite scene in the movie is the shot of the mirrors. Like, way to go.
Oh, yeah. Really good.
But the scene where she basically hijacks the car, like, she leaves the lady on the side of the road, and her son won't shut the fuck up, and she literally, she's on the lam, and so she's like, I'm going to make a decision here, and she drugs her own son, crying the entire time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Okay, is the mom a drug addict?
I don't know.
It seems like, because they show her popping a pill or two, and I'm like,
I don't know.
Is she on drugs?
I don't know, but...
The moment where
she's crying and she realizes that she's wrong, but at the same time, she is not being supported for this colonization.
Yeah.
This literal fucking colonization into her womb. She is not supported for it.
I plant this flag in the name of the United States of America. Okay, now here's a big thing.
Yes.
And the ending here, I have some problems with. I think the narrative in the ending kind of falls apart. It gets a little weird. First, we'll talk about the stuff that it was like, this is pretty crazy. And I liked it. She gets frustrated. She's like, I can't be on the run. I've murdered someone. I've stolen this money. I'm going to write a note and leave this car somewhere with my kid while he's sleeping because I drugged him. And the cops are going to go and take him away. Like, did you think they were going to take the little kid to like a foster care system or somewhere else? Like, did you think they were going to take him to the dad? You know,
well, she
like
left
that
a note with explicit instructions.
That's wild. Okay, here's why I think it's wild. She left a note saying, take this child to the cowboy man so he can raise this kid.
The cowboy man from Mulholland Drive.
Yes. P.S. I murdered your wife. And now here's your illegitimate child you never wanted.
Yeah, exactly. You know, okay, so I see your problem. I see it.
We could have had an entire film of this man raising this child, and that would have been fantastic. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we could have had a second half of this, like 30 minutes condensed of the first of this film, mm-hmm. and then another 30 minutes or whatever of just like that. Because, like, how does this child end up okay or happy in any way? He's probably going to get abused or ignored or like, you know, it's like this guy doesn't want him.
Yeah.
So I thought if that's done intentionally, I thought it was very strong. I'm like, this is crazy. But I was really craving more of like, I have to know more about how this works out. But then we have she comes back and visits him 13 years later. And this is where it kind of falls apart for me because she is a wanted fugitive for murder, mm-hmm. and she shows up to the boy's house. He's still living with the dad whose wife she killed. You know, I mean, like, what's happening here? So she's like, hey, I just want to let you know I never wanted to leave you and I love you. And that's a touching scene. But in the back of my mind, all I'm thinking about is murderer, murderer, murderer. You literally killed the father's fucking wife and you're at his house right now. It's bizarre. It was just very bizarre to me. How did you feel during that?
Well, I mean, yes, I didn't go that far, but my murderer bells were going off whenever she went back to the trailer park that she lives in. It's like they're going to pick you up. Like that's the first place they're going to look.
Yeah, yeah.
Is at your trailer. But here you are.
Well, I thought she went to like a friend's or something. I didn't realize that was the same trailer park.
I think it's the same. Like they all lived in the same area.
But then it makes me think like if she has a support system, like she has a sister or friends, like why doesn't she go and lean on them for help? I know she's very poor and she's working this one job, but like, there's got to be, I guess there's, like, no one else. It would have been interesting to see her try other options before becoming so desperate that she has to shoot and steal.
Here's gonna be where I depart from that.
Okay.
I see the argument. I think it's a great argument to make, and I would make the same argument. But what that does is that gets in the way with the strength of the metaphor. And that's what's important to the film.
Okay. It's just the more realistic, I guess, the narrative is being portrayed as, the better the surreal and like fantastical that stuff can kind of come into place, I guess. So like if we're in this world with the rules of like this is the normal world, you know, then but I'm also assuming that, you know, like this is stuff I would do. This is not what this character would do. What would this character do? So if she's following how she would act, if it makes sense to her, then I guess that makes sense. This is insane. What I'm saying is fucking ridiculous.
If I were in a Native American woman's shoes.
I don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know what we would do. Well, you know, okay, here's my example. Let me give you an example. So you have like a stupid character. They hear a noise in the basement and the power has gone off. You're like, oh, I better go investigate the basement. And then you're like, oh, that's really dumb. I would never go down there and investigate the basement. But we're not this character. If this character has been established to be the type of person who would go down into basements to investigate things, then it makes sense for that character to go down to the basement and investigate the spooky noise. You know what I mean? That's all I'm trying to say.
I get it. You're right.
Okay, final thoughts, Dan. What do you think?
If you are into art film and cinematography, like this film is worth checking out. It's not that long. I think it's a strong narrative that suffers because of I mean, we've already said this. I think it's a strong narrative. It may get lost on people. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with everything you're saying. I'm mixed on it. I'm mixed on it. Cause there is a lot of great stuff here, but, you know, keep looking forward to
Mummy Murders. Like, it has not deterred me at all. Like, I'm really looking forward to this next film, so.
I really like the art covers for these films, too.
Oh, the cover for
Murmurs.
The cover for No Promised Land is incredible.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's looking very pretty interesting. Okay.
Guys, Dan, you can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. We got a message from Colin Bressler on Instagram, so here it is. We serve him up even on the gram.
That's right. Gram him up. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. If you like our show, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or ByTunes or any of the other things your review places at. We're out there. We're hustling. That's what we do. And we appreciate you. Dan, you got the final word.
I'm addicted to hustling. See, I'm a hustle addict.
Yeah, a hustle-holic.